Welcome back to a brand new episode of Logs Talking to Joking Addicts. My name is Romano.
My name is Dean.
And we have a lovely, lovely guest all the way down from Ballina, a good mate of mine I haven't seen in 4 years.
Must be 4 years at least.
Yeah.
I'm Luke.
Nice to meet you, bro.
Good to see you again.
Yeah, it feels like we met each other again for the first time.
Yeah.
It's the first time, I think, without substances or any alcohol.
100%, yeah.
How are you?
Good now, good. Yeah. Enjoying recovery now, enjoying life. So much easier.
A big day yesterday?
Big day yesterday, yeah. 4 years, yeah.
4 years.
Hey, congrats.
Get in.
Oh, the time is absolutely flowing, though. It's mental-like. Feels like yesterday, it's only going into treatment. But now it's just, like I said to Dean, I said, you're noticing everything when you have that clear mind.
Yeah.
You're noticing the trees, the autumn changing colour. You're noticing the birds. You're hearing sounds you never, because you wouldn't pass any heed to it. The only time you'd hear the birds when you're walking home at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Coming, do you feel like they're attacking you or something?
Yeah, the hood up walking down the street.
Oh man, I remember fucking the amount of times that me and him used to use like together quite frequently for a good 2 years.
Especially got you into a lot of trouble.
Bit of balls in the door. I'd be saying to me, miss, I'm going out for one pint, and he'd be like, oh, so we'll go on it, and then fucking we'd be on it for 3 or 4 days, man. It was just mayhem down there.
Yeah, absolutely chaos, like
for years. Were you down there for 2 years, Stan Sligo?
About that,
did you even go to college?
I did. When I first went down to college, I was in every day I actually wanted. Then I dropped out. The end of that first year, I tried MD for the first time. And I was like, geez, that's great. But I started doing an apprenticeship. Fucked that to the side, and I reapplied for college. But I'd failed exams, so I decided I'd go back and repeat them. I'd say I went into college 3 times that year.
Actually. Did you?
Yeah. It was just
what, the same course?
Same course, yeah. But sure, it wasn't for me. It was in computing or something. Like,
definitely not.
No, sure, like I build engines. You know? So, like, I have to be hands on. But no, it was mental down there.
Did you take drugs or alcohol before college?
Yeah, I would have tried. I'd say hash. I'd say the first
hash.
Hash, yeah. It was actually hash. Yeah. Hash when I was about, I'd say, 16 maybe. Didn't really do anything for me. But then one of the lads had, remember the head shafts that used to be on? Something like that, and that blew the head clean off me.
King B or Bonsai or something.
Yeah, King B, that was it, yeah.
It was mental.
Oh, stuff, sick.
I remember I used to buy fucking like 5 pre-rolls or something, I'd be off that job.
Yeah,
completely different. Yeah, it's a completely different. It's not like a stone at all. It blows.
It was up, it was an upper.
I don't know what the fuck it was.
Pure chemicals.
Oh, man.
Even after it, your head would be spinning and everything.
Yeah, but a lot of people with those kind of head shop stuff, complete psychosis from it, and never fucking, never came back down, like. I know a lot of people from Sligo.
People died all over from it as well.
Yeah, sure, they're still open in England, I believe.
Are they?
Yeah, I think they're still open in England. I think that's where all that spice originated from.
Yeah.
But even if you read the packet back then, it was like, not for human consumption.
Yeah.
But it like, said legal high.
Bath salts and stuff and all I had on it. It was for the bats they were trying to say, like.
Yeah, it's mad. Absolutely mad. But yeah, look, I'm very happy to have you down, bro, because I haven't seen you in so long. And I remember seeing a post that you had on Facebook the first year you had clean. That was fucking mind-blowing to see that, because I know how deep the both of us were.
Yeah.
With drugs, everything else that came with it, and to see you doing so well, it's an inspiration, man. Looking back on it now, it planted the seed in my head to see you doing so well, and it's fucking great to see you in yesterday celebrate 4 years clean.
Yeah, that was the whole idea, the Facebook post. Like, in my own head, before I even put them up, I think people are going to think I'm looking for attention now or something. But I was like, even if it hit home for one person, like, I'd be delighted, like, get someone on track. I would have loved, when I was trying to get sober, I was like, see someone my age at the time. I was, 24 when I got clean and sober. About my 25th birthday, actually, in Hope House.
Did you?
Yeah, I remember they gave me a book on gratitude. Still have it, like.
See,
yeah. Yeah.
Do you still study that to this day?
No.
No?
Out the window.
I still have the book, but no, I do study gratitude. You think, so lucky to have this, that, the other, like.
Yeah.
Remember, a lot of it at the beginning was like, you'd hear people got this car, this thing, it's all materialistic things. But it's peace of mind is what I have today and that I got from that. You're not looking over your shoulder. You can go home and even relax. You're not here trying to gather up money for this person, that person.
Tell us a little bit about, like, how it even all started for you.
Yeah, growing up, I had a great family. Still have a great family. Never wanted for anything, like, they were absolutely great. Nothing from my childhood made me go down that road. I know a lot of people say I didn't wake up one morning and say, right, I'm going to be an alcoholic and a drug addict. Didn't want that at all. Started off, like I said, with head shop stuff or hash or something. Remember one Christmas, like, one of the lads, he got speed and we took that. Fucking hated it. I was up all night, couldn't sleep. I was like, oh, fuck this stuff. Wasn't interested. I suppose drinking from a young age, had no interest in it when I was younger. But then gradually, as everyone else started doing it, I think it's about 16, and then I used to just pull the piss altogether. I remember, I don't know where I was, but I was found in a bush, passed out after drinking nearly a litre bottle of vodka. Parents had to pick me up or whatever. Slide in the garden like this on my back, only for, I think it was a teenage disco or something. Your man found me. I had a brand new pair of shoes on, they're very white. He said, all he seen was the two shoes sticking up out of a bush. But I remember that night, my parents had to bring me home. I thought I'd have to go to the hospital to get my stomach pumped, but that didn't happen, thank God. That was, I'd say, the first incident of my drinking.
What age were you then?
I'd say 16.
16.
So like myself as well, it's, and all these things happening, like, it make you stop and think, whoa. But like you said there, everybody's doing it.
Everyone's doing it.
It becomes normal.
Like after that, then I kind of went off to drink. I had no interest in it. Kind of just went through school or whatever, but I'd be out every weekend or whatever, drinking. Nothing mad, like. But a few occasions, say if I drank Sambuca or vodka or something, that'd send me fucking loopers all together. Big old nuts. And finished school then, and I'd done a PLC for a year, and that was grand. Just no real incidents as such. Like, I didn't try, cocaine was my main choice of drug. I didn't try that till I think I was 20. And the first time I took it, I fucking hated it. It's such a waste of money. It's like I got absolutely nothing off that. But I think after that, then I started in college. And the first year, there was a lot of drinking. Like, you know, it was just normal
thing to do, yeah.
Normal thing to do. But that progressed. Like, I was at the weekends then, out drinking all the time. And then dropped out of college. Just before I dropped out of college, actually, it was Rag Week. We were in a house in Glencairn, typical, like. And one of the lads said, here, have a line of this MDMA. And the come up I got off that, I was like, there's nothing like this. This is absolutely unbelievable. And from then...
I forget a burn on my nose there.
Yeah, I was absolutely sick. But after that, just dropped out of college, started doing an apprenticeship. But then in my own head, I was like, I don't want to be here. I want to be in Sligo again. I want to be partying and taking drugs. But I wasn't really thinking that at the same time. I was like, right, I want to go back and get what I was went up there to do.
Jason.
So I took out a loan that time to go back to pay. I had to repeat a load of exams or whatever. And I was waiting around. I went down in like August or something. Like, there was no need for me to be there. So I moved into Brookfield. That was the name of the estate.
I remember that house.
Yeah, moved in there anyways. Waiting around for college to start up. And I was drinking, getting MD. I remember the first night of Sligo, everyone was actually back. I had the house party. Like, you know how everyone have a house party. Up all night stiff at MD. And I still hadn't found out yet if I was actually back in college. I was waiting to see what exams I could repeat. So, like, just lushing down the brewery all the time and everything. And that was grand. And
that house party you're talking about, was that the night Keelan Moran's door got kicked in his bedroom?
Yeah, I think that could have been. Yeah. That. But, like, that was just the start of the year. Like, I remember just absolutely hanging the jog on 90 at that time. It was fucking mental. All these people I thought were my friends around me and everything. But after that, I was actually going out with a girl for, I think, 4 or 5 years. Got rid of her because she was kind of getting in the way of me using it. The loan I had got, I had paid like 400 to the college. I got a 3 grand loan. That was dwindling. I was like, fuck. And then everyone around me started selling drugs. So I said, fuck it, that'll pay back my loan. So I kind of got in with small bits and started selling. But more so, it was feeding my drinking habit. I was working in a pub at the weekends when I came back up home. And you'd have your few pints after, whatever, but it'd be back down. You'd be always looking forward to going back down to Sligo. But I still had that money, but sure, I was blowing that on drinking the weekends or going back down. Started selling anyways and got into debt fairly fast, like, because obviously I was selling. I was thinking, this is great, I have all this money, but it wasn't my money, it was someone else's money.
Yeah.
I was just drinking away every single night, like, and I remember one of the first weeks I went back to college, I remember we'd done a full week of MD. Went to the pub Friday to work. Had one sip of a pint after, and that was me. I was sick. I've never felt sickness like it since, for say a week, just from all the drugs coming out of me or whatever.
And at that time, would you have had any awareness that there was a problem, or was it just, were you just gone, like?
Just gone. Didn't think I had a problem because everyone else was doing it.
Yeah.
In my friend circle, I thought, right, this is normal enough, like. But then at the same time, I was watching other people going into college and whatever. And eventually, I got back into college. But I say, that year, I went in 5 times. It was just party, party, party. Like, there was no stopping me. And then started the first rollover I ever done. I think I was actually with you.
Shock,
yeah. But then I was thinking, this is great. I can stay up all night or whatever. And then coke was kind of introduced again there, and that's when I started really getting heavy on the coke, even though I didn't have the money, but sure, I was selling so I could get coke. The first time I saw coke, I was wondering, why is no one else selling it? And one of the lads said, warned me, he was like, don't get it, you'll sniff it all yourself. I was like, I'll go away with that. I said, so I think I got a bear the first time, like, pure stupid. Remember when we got it, we all brought it back home and looking at it like, this is unbelievable, racking out lines here, there and everywhere. And that didn't last long. So sure, I was giving it out and losing bits and the whole lot. And coming up to Christmas that year, I remember the whole lot was gone. I had this huge bill. I was like, what the fuck am I going to do? So I had to get more stuff. And the dealer was asking, he's like, where's the money or what's the story? He's like, I'll give you this, but I need a certain amount of money before Christmas. So I was like, yeah, so I'll get it done. And went home selling. And I remember I came to, it was the day before Christmas Eve. And I texted him. I said, look, I don't have the money or whatever. And anyways, I had to get it down to him. He said, no, you have to. And this fella had gotten a half ounce off me the night before, the two nights before that. And he said to me, he said, look, I'll pay you when you come back up home and you can pay your man. I said, sound. But anyways, that didn't happen. And I had to make up some bullshit story that your man was in a hotel in Galway or whatever and went down, told this fella, gave him his money. And pure lies, like, Christmas Eve anyway, got a phone call saying, I know you were lying, you need to get this amount of money. And that's when I started panicking. Like, I never panic. Like, I'm very laid back. At the same time, like, I still didn't know that I had a problem. I was thinking, oh, sure, look, if whatever. I was like, Jesus, sure, I was giving it out here and there. And then asking people for money I thought was my friends. Didn't happen.
Never have it, man.
Got him paid, and I was like, right, when I go back down there, I said, I'm going to just cut ties with this. Like, I'm going to get this paid or whatever, but sure, that didn't happen. Went back down in January then. I had to repeat maths that time. I was getting grinds all the way up to this, and I went in. I said, that's the only class I went into. Remember when we went back in January, I had to go in and repeat one maths exam. I've been getting grinds the whole time. We drove over to where I was supposed to be going, forgot my calculator, fucked off back to bed. That was the end of that. Like, yeah. Like, pure bad.
Life just became unmanageable, didn't it? Like,
yeah.
Manageability was shocking, like.
Yeah, it was just like there was no sense of anything. It was just, I'm going to go drinking this week. That's all I'm going to do. Everyone else is added to, why can't I? But then I had always a big bill because I get more stuff. And then I'd be like, in my own head, I'd be like, right, sure, I can take this, but I can sell it another way. And
never works.
Never works out.
My woman used to call me the most unsuccessful drug dealer ever.
Yeah,
I'd get bids and I just snort it all. And then I'd have not. I'd be getting something off someone else to pay back that person. I'd snort that as well. Like, fuck. I got an ounce of coke off a fella and it was unreal. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to test this out tonight.
That's the worst thing you can say.
I was barely with a spoon, like a tablespoon, and an ounce of coke. Just, and I wouldn't even give anyone anything either, man. I would just walk around with it. And I was like, the next morning, he's like, any money? I was like, no. He was like, how? Like, how did you snort an ounce of coke? I don't have the answers. I really did.
Just
like,
happened.
Oh, man. It's fucking wild.
It really is true what the saying, isn't it? One is too many in a thousand.
It's never enough, man. And I, honestly, I was paying back people, 3-4 people, €50 every single week. So 50 few. And that was gone for like 3 years. And then when I finally got my bill down, I think I owed a man £70 and I gave him 50. And then he was like, you still owe me 20. I was like, you're not getting it. You're not getting the £20. Fuck off.
Yeah.
Anything to get one over, man.
Stop, yeah, that was it. Like, it was always the same with me. If I didn't have enough to pay this for, I'd get tick off someone else to pay this. And
someone less dangerous.
Yeah. I remember that January then, that happened. I used to come home, and when I took stuff, my eyeballs used to just go black. My mother would be looking at me coming home on a Friday. She's like, what's wrong with your eyes? I was like, geez, I don't know, I wear contact. It's like, they're very dry. She sent me in for an eye test. Yeah.
<no.
laughs> Yeah. And
the innocence, though. No.
Oh, stop,
the
yeah.
Mutilation, you mean?
Yeah. Sent me in for an eye test anyway, but sure, that was... But I knew in my head it was the drugs, like, because my eyes used to just go black. Even if I looked at the stuff, I could say it'd go black.
Yeah.
But,
like a shark.
Yeah. But that was grand anyways, and they kind of started coughing on. They were like, she rang the college then to see what was going on with me. And whoever she got through to said, we haven't seen him at all. So they wanted to pull me out of Sligo, and this was in February. This is where kind of my addiction took a turn, I suppose you could say. It was the last night I was in Sligo. And we were all out partying. We were on a 3-day bender or whatever. And we were out in 6th at the time. We went back to the house. We ran out of drink. And there was another fellow with us at the time. He rarely took drugs now at all. very rarely. But whatever happened, he took too much. He was sitting there, whatever, and it was grand, whatever. And then I actually jumped in my car to go to his house to get drink with another fellow. I came back anyways. Ambulance, the guards outside. So I drove around, jumped back on, wondering. I said, your man's in there. He's not breathing. I was kind of like, what the fuck? Didn't know what to do. So that played fuck with me and my addiction. Like, obviously at this time, I didn't know I was an addict. After that, I was pulled from Sligo, well, I was leaving Sligo anyways. So went back up home and I started a welding course that time. But obviously I was still selling drugs. I still had this big debt. And at the time, I didn't want to be doing anything with it after what happened to him. I was like, fuck this. But sure, I couldn't tell anyone that I owed this money. No one knew or anything. I managed to keep going, but there was still every weekend. I still out partying. Dada bothers me fucking getting debt everywhere, getting debt from other people. Mm-hmm. That was March that happened, or end of February, March. And I done my course. But like, every day, like I finished the welding course, I go home. Think lovely, relax, but you can't. You have this big debt over you. You need to get someone paid. They have someone to pay, so you have to pay them. And obviously I was still drinking, and like all my money was going on drinking drugs. Like if it was, I was sniffing it myself or whatever I was selling it. I think I was selling weed, coke, MD, whatever he had, I was selling for him. But that was grand, and finished the welding course anyways. And I remember it was September time. I think this is my first rock bottom. I got a job or whatever after the welding course, and the bill was up. I was something crazy anyways. And I was actually down in Sligo for, you know, when the graduation is on. Came down here. I was arguing with my mother the week before. Or before I went down, she's like, don't go down there. She said, you know that place, fucking whatever. Went down, partied all weekend, no sleep, no nothing. Drove home the Sunday morning, depressed out of my head, went straight up to bed, wouldn't talk to my parents or nothing. Monday morning, I remember I was in work. I was just depressed. I was like nothing. I was actually sitting in the bathroom at work writing a suicide letter on my phone. I was just like, fuck this. I was like, I've had enough. I said, I can't pay this bill. No one knows. But I got a text that evening from my uncle. He said, call in to me. Same fella. He's in recovery himself. My grandfather's actually in recovery as well for alcohol. He's over 40 years sober. Like, so it runs in the family too. I'm not using that as an excuse to have that when it comes to our alcoholics. But yeah, he called me in anyways, and he said to me, you're selling drugs. I said, no, I'm not. He's like, I know you're selling drugs, or whatever. And I spilled the beans, so we'll get that sorted. Anyways, he was there fucking ahead of me or whatever. And he's like, would you call your youth recreational? And for me, I didn't even know what that meant. I was like, yeah. And he was like, cocaine, recreational. He's like, what's wrong with you? He was like, that's not normal. But anyways, he called in my mother and my aunt then, because he was going to let me go. Then he said something to me, and I was like, to be honest, this is my plan for this evening. Showed him the phone, the suicide letter. He made me wait there until they got there. And they both came in, and they were like, how much do you owe? And they were kind of shocked at that. And I had to come clean the next day because my father found out as well. My mother told my father. And then I told them the real price, and they rallied around me. Like, they helped me pay it. We got that sorted, and I was like, you know, it was like a weight lifted off me. I was like, this is fucking...
Same thing happened myself. My ma and my nanny, God bless them, like, they had to... I was in Sligo at the time, but I was back and forth from Sligo to Dublin, and I remember getting a phone call then saying, that bill is cleared, your bill is gone. And, you know, I remember sitting up on the bed in the hostel out in Strand Hill, and for the first time in my life, I felt like I had a choice. The first time in my life, you know, it's like, right, do I go back to Dublin and, let's be honest, do it all over again, or do I stay here? You know, so I went back to Dublin and says, I'm gone. Says, see you all later. Says, I'm out here. Says, I can't do this. Do you know what I mean? It was...
Yeah, no, the weight just lifts off my shoulder. I remember I came down to one of the lads and he was like, fair fucks to you. He's like, I could see the stress that was coming. He's like, finally you're out of it, delighted with life. But that was... September time, but still I was out every weekend. I was sniffing and Valium. Someone introduced me to Valium then, and fucking dangerous. There's days and weeks I don't remember.
I remember taking trays. I used to rob my mother. This is how sick I used to get, man. I was only about 15. I knew my mother had stashes of Valium, and when she'd go to the toilet, I'd run down the stairs tiptoe in, take four Valium, swallow them upstairs, hear her going to the toilet again, back down, and
Same with sleeping tablets, man. I remember taking trays of sleeping tablets. Fucking bad news there.
Yeah, sure, I remember. So I shouldn't be laughing about it, but I took a load of them one night. I think I put a load of them in a cup of tea. I used to always put them in tea.
We don't have
MD tea, but just stop with that. So, and took a load anyways, and I was drinking it anyways. And I was texting one of the lads at the time. He was like, "Are you okay?" I said, "Yeah, why?" He was like, "Well, you look like you're having a stroke and you're not making any sense in the text." Then I fell asleep and I loaded his phone calls. He thought, "God, what's wrong with this fella?" But another time at the Valleys as well, I'd watched a movie, didn't realise I watched a movie. But 2 or 3 months later, it's like, it was World War Z, actually. I got to the end of the movie, I was like, I could have sworn I'd seen this before. Like, anyways, at the end of the movie, I fucking have seen this. I watched this about 2 months ago, but completely melted on value. But yeah, I came to Christmas time last year and the usual shit, like out Stephen's Day, out for 3 or 4 days, sniffing, drinking, but still didn't see a problem because at the time everyone
else was selling drugs, you were just taking it.
Just taking it. Yeah. At the time everyone else was doing it. Mm. After that I was working in a place for ages and then supposed to get an apprenticeship and I was waiting for this for ages and in the meantime I had my appendix out. And so I was off work for ages. I was waiting and waiting. And I actually remember the last time I seen you. Me and two of the lads are in Ballina. We're like, "Jesus, we'd love a game of pool." We're in the pub and tried a bag of coke. We were sniffing and passing around a few valleys, knocking them back. We're like, "We'll go to the Scrone for a game of pool." No pool tables in the Scrone at all. Anyway, fuck it. We go down to Sligo. Ended up down there for 2 days. Like, I mean, I'd say about 3 days after I get my appendix out, like, and up. Two or three day bender, like, again. Went home anyways. That was that. Still the same every weekend. It was just repetitive. My parents were getting fed up with playing them because, like, I was fried. But got the apprenticeship as a plumber or whatever. Got into
the hours of a plumber.
Got that anyways. And still the same thing. This was about a year after the thing happened, your man in Sligo, and I got a phone call one day. Like, I couldn't even bring myself to go in and visit that fella. Like, he was a good friend as well, but I got a phone call one Sunday evening saying that he's not well at all. Like, so the Monday morning I went into work. I was only in the job about a week and I got the phone call that he had passed away. And then it was just carnage. Can't even describe it, like, yeah, the feelings I was thinking.
Imagine how that must have been.
Like, I remember everyone came up, they all stayed at my house that time, but sure, like, we were fools, so we were off our heads, like, for the few days the funeral was on, like,
that.
Yeah, it was fucking pure, even looking back now, it's so disrespectful,
You think
you would have learned your lesson at that time, like, yeah. Look what happened.
One of our friends after dying, drugs, for the funeral, we just... Oh man, it's madness.
That's just the way it was though, wasn't it? Like, we spent years holding myself over stuff that happened and stuff we'd done in my past, you know. But then, you know, a fella told me up in Dublin at a meeting one night, he says, "Put down the stick and pick up the feather." We've been beating ourselves up for years and years. We weren't driving, you know. We were there, we witnessed it. We were bad for all, but we weren't driving.
Just in the passenger seat, kind of.
Yeah,
looking at everything.
Yeah, just looking at it, oblivious to everything. We didn't know what was going on in the world. Some of the stuff we've done as well, and you know, it's taking its time. You know, the work being done. You know, talking to friends. You know, like, you'll become a friend of mine now because of this. Do you know what I mean? When the honesty is shared amongst people, you really feel that. Like, I'm sitting here and I'm not just listening to your story, do you know what I mean? I can fucking feel it because I've had some similar situations with friends as well, and it's like, it's gut-wrenching, like, you know, and all we can do is do our best today for them. Like, I always say that to myself, I'm living my best life that my friend didn't get to live. You know, that's what I'm doing today. Do you know what I mean? I'm living the life that he should have lived, you know?
It's difficult, man. And not many people... I buried my head in the sand for years about this kind of stuff. Any debts, drink, take drugs. Any fucking happiness, drink, take drugs. Any sort of emotion, feeling. And for you to come here today, man, and sit there and talk openly about it, that takes balls, man. It really, really does.
After that, then, it was his month's mind. And my parents were actually on holidays and a couple of the lads were at the house and we were up all night stiff and everything, and everyone was going to a meal after the mass, whatever. I couldn't bring myself to go. But after that weekend, I remember the Monday morning, I was driving to work and I was so fried in my head, tried crashing my car into the lake that morning. And this, my best friend came to the hospital, picked me up. He's like, what's wrong with you? He was like, just talk to me, talk to someone. So I started going to counselling after that.
Yeah.
In my own mind, I took a step back then, I thought, from drinking and drugging. That lasted a few months. And then the apprenticeship kind of went sour and I ended up quitting that. And I remember it was an August bank holiday weekend, quit that job and went on a bender for 3 days and I was just back to square one. I wasn't working, nothing. Applied for a welding course down here in Sligo, actually. But I was off work for ages and got into that. But at the same time, I had this great plan. I was like, right, I'm going to go back selling drugs for money.
Successfully.
Yeah.
And planning. And
yeah, open mind. I went to a medium and the friend I was on about there, this is all after all this, he said, you're the worst drug dealer that was ever put on two legs. But anyway, started selling again and it was going grand. Well, it wasn't going grand. Like, I was still selling drugs, but managed to pay me debts or whatever. And that was kind of October time. But I stopped going to the courses in Sligo for the welding. I had no interest in getting up at 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock in the morning to come down here because I had money there. But then again, it wasn't my own money. It was someone else's money. Like, then in November, I remember the night before this happened, my mother found out that I wasn't going into the welding course because she got a phone call. There was a phone call made to the house and he was just arguing with her. And she was like, you need to cop on now, all this. And I was like, right. So that was the Sunday. I went out Saturday and Sunday. I was out probably for the 2 days or whatever, came home. And she gave me that talk. And then the Monday, the 13th of November, we were, two or three of us went to look at a car that evening. And a couple of the boys are in town. And one of my best friends and another good friend of mine, they were in town and I was supposed to go to meet them. But obviously, I was arguing with my mother the night before. And I said, you know what, fuck it, I'd better go home. So I went home. And I was sitting in the house and I got a text saying two of the lads are in a crash. And I was kind of like, oh, fuck. And I thought it was, in my own head, I thought, right, go down, get them out or whatever, see what the story is. Then I started getting all these texts and texts. I ended up driving down to where it was, and by the time I had got there, one of the lads had passed away. And my best friend, he was the one driving the car, and he went to Castlebar, and we went up to Castlebar, and I remember got there, and one of the lads came out, and he said, he's gone. And that broke me altogether. Absolutely broke me. I remember just sitting in the car like this and just started punching the windscreen. I was like, no, this isn't true, this isn't true. Just that whole week was just a blur. Like, the same fella, he was literally like an older brother I never had. And just from there, like, I lost complete control. I just didn't care about anything or anyone.
And you couldn't process all that.
Yeah, what's the point? Like, I was like, fuck this. I was like, fuck everyone. So I was treating everyone like shit. I was just gone nuts. And then again, I was racking up a bill, not paying. Didn't even care. Like, I was just gone absolutely nuts, treating my parents like shit. In December then, I was selling the whole time. Like, this just shows the madness, actually. So I remember December, I was on the way up the country to get a bar of coke because it was cheap because it was Christmas or whatever. But like, we got the bar of coke, me and one of the lads went up, and before we even got out of where we got it from, we were pulled in on the side of a main road, opening it up with all vacuums. They'd open it up and taken keys out of it. Like, if that's not insanity, like, and drove.
You can't even wait.
No, I couldn't even wait.
Oh, stop.
That Christmas is just one of the worst Christmases. Just I wasn't myself, I wasn't there. I was constantly off my head. I just didn't want to feel anything.
Yeah.
And that January came, and I remember the bill was getting higher and higher, and sure, I had no drugs, I had no money, I had to pay this. And I went to a very good friend of mine and I said to him, I said, can I borrow some money? He said, what's it for? So I told him the crack, and him and another fella stepped in and they actually paid the bill for me. Fair fucks to like, thanked them for that today, like, because without that I would have been fucked. So I wasn't selling, but I still had this serious addiction. Still at the time, no, I hadn't a clue that I was an addict or alcoholic. I remember that January, I moved out of the house while I was still selling, just so I could sell, so I could leave the house or whatever. I rented an apartment in Ballina. It's pure stupidity. The things I said to my parents that time was just chronic. I'm still ashamed of it today. Like, there was no need to put them through that. They were going through enough with me, worrying about me the full time. They never stopped worrying about me, like. But they paid my bill or whatever, and I was supposed to be paying them back bits or whatever, and that didn't happen. Like, I was obviously still out choosing any bit of money I got. I was buying stuff for this, that, or the other. And eventually they brought me up to my house one day, and I used to tell my parents that I got in this debt again. I was like, what the f-? I said, how in God's name? From going from that feeling, like, this weight is lifted off my shoulders. But I remember I sat there in the chair. I couldn't even look at them in the eye. And I didn't give a fuck. Like, I was a piece of shit, like, because I was sitting.
Guilt and shame, like.
Yeah, I didn't even feel guilt or shame.
I know what you're talking about. You're just there because you have to be there.
I have to be there, like.
But not caring. I know.
And they went mental, and eventually they had to bail me. They paid the two lads back for that. But I moved home then, and I was home, and I still went back, kind of getting an ounce here of someone, like you said. You know, you'd be getting an ounce off someone to pay back someone else.
More the good stuff.
Yeah, or even have a bit of money to go out drinking or whatever. And that went on for months. It went on from January to, I'd say, May. And it was just chaos altogether. Wasn't talking to my parents. They were just at their wits' end with me, like, didn't know what to do. And it, all going through this, I still didn't think I had a problem. I remember the day I had to tell my parents again that I got into debt. My father said, do you need to go into a house? I was looking, I was like, what's wrong with you, like? I said, I said, do you need to go into a house? Like, pure cheeky, like, pure dick.
We can imagine the face on him when you turned around and said to him.
Yeah.
Clipper on the ear roll.
The absolute cheek of me to do that.
Right, guys, we're just going to take a quick break. We'll be back just after the ad.
This season is sponsored by Cloud9 Dogs, the Norway's first doggy daycare centre, located on the old Dublin Road, Carr Road, Sligo. If you're inside a 10k radius, have your dog picked up in the doggy van and dropped home after daycare. Opening hours are 8:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Get your dog groomed by their groomer that has over 12 years experience in the game. If you're going on holidays, you can also book your dog into the Cloud9 Dogs Hotel, located on the premises, where night staff will be present. Find them on Facebook, Instagram and even TikTok. For all your doggy needs, their website is www.cloud9dogs.com. That's www.cloud9dogs.com.
Just, I was lonely. I was just going to counselling. I lost my best friend and another friend through that car accident. And another friend actually had passed away in February, suicide. And that just added to it, like, as well.
Oh.
So that's our four friends in the space of a year.
Fucking hell, man.
But still, just, I didn't want to feel anything that time.
Yeah.
The only reason I was taking coke and drugs at that time, just to numb myself up, I didn't want to feel a thing. And I thought, I was off doing it on my own. I was like, sure, who cares? I'm not hurting anyone, only myself. Like, why are people bothered about me and all this? They care, like. I couldn't see that at the time, but they were just in the way of me taking drugs. But yeah, this is how fried I went then. It was May time, and I remember I was doing work for my father, and I was in my head, I was kind of contemplating suicide for the last few months. I said, I can't fucking deal with this anymore. And I was actually getting excited to think, like, if I kill myself now, I'm going to be back there with the boys. It's all going to be happy Larry, like. But actually, sorry, before that, no, actually, I'm backtracking. I went to a medium back in, I don't know that any of you believe in that. I never believed in them.
Kind of, man. I'm a little bit sceptical.
Yeah, I was the exact same until I went to it. I went to him when the boys died first. And the stuff she could tell me, like, I was like, this, I said, how does she know this stuff? But, like, talking to her was like talking to my friend. the jives were just going back and forward, and she was like, I was mesmerised by it. But it gave me that kind of hope, or I don't know what it gave me at the time. But I went back then in May time, and I remember I was out the night before, and I was sniffing, and I was absolutely valued out of it, going into her, and the minute I walked in the door, she goes to me, you're on something. He's saying, you're on something. I was like, I'm not. I'm not. You were on something. Little blue tablets. So I was like, fuck sake. I was like, yeah.
Jesus. That's mental.
But he was going daft at me through her, like, speaking. Yeah. And he was giving out to me because I just completely fucked over. The two lads that paid my bill, I was backbiting them, or backbiting one of them and saying this, that, and the other, and he was going nuts. And then she said to me, she says, I'm very worried for you. She was like, You're an addict. You're a junkie. This is what he was saying. And I was like, I go away with that. And she was like, there's something showing up here. It's like water. She said something is going to, something to do with water anyway, and it's not good. And I didn't pass any heat. So I could barely remember the reading, only for I recorded it. And she said, you're not going to be able to get yourself clean unless you go in somewhere. She said, there's no hope. I didn't pass any heat. At this time, I still didn't think I was alcoholic or an addict or anything. But that May time then, I remember I was just fed up. I was in my own head, I was that fucked. I was getting excited thinking, right, I'm going to be back there at the boys if I do this. So I was out for a few days and I was taking speed, smoking weed, hated weed, like just for something to take. Handfuls of Valleys this certain day, stiff and coke. And I remember that morning I woke up and I took 6 Panadol. Just knocked them back thinking, all right, this might do. Went to the pub for the day and don't remember much from it, but that evening I threw myself into the river in Foxford, and only for another fellow I was taking drugs that was there. He heard, I don't know what he heard, but he ran over, grabbed me out, and I typed a suicide letter or texted to all my friends or whatever, and just fucked the phone there to the side of the river and went in. And just after that then, ended up in hospital that night, and the doctor was telling me, he's like, there's so much stuff in your system with uppers and downers. I don't know how your heart hasn't failed or how you're not even dead. But the few days after that were a blur because obviously the Valium or whatever was in me. But then I kind of thought to myself, I was like, something's not right here at all. And after that, a few weeks before that as well, I remember I ended up out sniffing in the car as usual. You know, you go out thinking this is great, like sniffing in the car. I came home at about 5 o'clock the next day, and I remember crawling up into the room and just put my head under the covers, and I was crying, and my mother walked in. She was like, what's wrong? You can talk to me or whatever. I was like, I think I have a problem with drugs. And she was like, I'm so glad you said it. She said, in the space of an hour, she had me sitting in the car with a fellow who's in recovery. He brought me for a spin and we were talking, and I was kind of thinking, I was asking him, I was like, I just want to give up the coke though. I said, I don't want to give up the drink. And he said, no, it's all or nothing, like. And then that just went out the window. But after that, June, July, August, September, I was still behind the scenes. I was still taking stuff, but not letting anyone know. Like, I remember we were doing up the house in Foxford. My parents moved to Ballinagh, but I got a job in the bakery in Foxford. So I was staying there. I mean, so the house is like a building site. I was up in the room. I had a little heater there. There was no heat in the house or nothing. I'd be there sniffing away every night. Pure paranoia too, looking out the window, peeping. Someone's coming. I remember nights I'd be lying in the bed and I could hear footsteps coming up the stairs. Man. I was like, right, this is me now. This is it. And I'd be closing my eyes and I'd be like,
waiting for it.
Yeah, waiting for it. No one there at all, like. It was just madness, like. I remember looking out the window too, and a few times it would have been jibing me and the lads. I'd be like, oh, Hope House is literally across the road from where I live.
Yeah.
We'd be looking out the window. Someday I'd wake up in the morning, I'd be looking at my own house. Sure enough, that fucking happened. Like, walking his cat.
Thankfully. Yeah.
Thankfully, that did happen. Like, I remember, they would have been two of my lowest points, but my lowest point was, it was January 2020.
Man, you're unreal at dates, you know that. I just keep listening. He's like January, February, March. I'm like, how the fuck?
I don't even know. I remember them. He said,
I memorized the mayor by it.
But it was January, and I was supposed to be up in court the following morning. I was out sniffing all night, and with two of the other lads, and I just made that joke again about Hope House, this, that, or the other. And they went off home anyways. I was up all night, peeping through the curtains. Like, I couldn't even take a key without getting that instant paranoia, like, of thinking, because I owed money, obviously, at the time, so thinking someone's going to come to the house. And that morning, the next morning, I was supposed to be in court, but next, you know, I was looking at the clock. It was 2 o'clock, right, I'd stopped now. 3 o'clock, right, fucking, I'd stopped now. Came up, I remember getting into the shower that morning, I was like, right. But in my own head, I was like, no, I said, I was just absolutely flattened. What? I wouldn't even be drinking when I'd be taking the cup. Just
dry sniffing.
Yeah. But I was like, no, I can't do this anymore. I was contemplating suicide again. But this time, I was like, no, sister. Like, even the times before, I'd be thinking in my own head, I'm like, how the fuck? You're that stupid. You can't even kill yourself. Like, had all these failed suicide attempts. But that morning, I got had my shower or whatever, and my mother was supposed to pick me up to bring me into court the following morning. And I got a cord from a telephone wire wrapped around my neck and just sank like that. And literally, the last thing I remember is just black. I was like, right, this must be it now. I'm gone, finished. I was like, right, I'll be at peace now. Then the next thing I remember is my father roaring. Go there and roaring. He said, look, I had the door locked to the house. You know, you can put in the key and no one else can get in. Could hear him roaring, looking at me, and he came in and broke down the door, and he took the thing from around my neck, and he said, the first thing I said to him was, I want help. I was like, I want help.
You were done.
I was done. I was completely fucked. And he was hugging me, and he was like, we'll get you help. And if you've seen the state of me, my eyes were all black here from, obviously, whatever I had cut off there. It was just fucked. My mother came up then and she looked to me, she started crying, she hugged me, she was like, it's all right. Said, we'll get you the help you need.
Make a wee tear up, you know.
And that was from that day then, it was just the best thing that I'm glad that happened, to be honest. Yeah. Because I'd still be on that cycle if I wasn't. Mm. I wouldn't be here. Was brought back into Ballinad and I was down in Sligo. Went down to see I don't know who it is, you go down there, the mental, whatever, they talked to me, and I said, I know what my problem is. And I remember, this just shows the addict that I was prescribed, what's that stuff they give you for coming off the drink and stuff?
Librium.
See how we knew that? Yeah. Set us away.
I was prescribed Librium, and it's like, I was taking them just to wean myself off. But I remember, I went back to the doctor and got another prescription for it. My mother found it. She's like, what are you doing with this? I said, I need more of that. She got it and fucked it in the bin. But
I want that one.
But so the first few days I didn't know what it was doing. I knew I needed to go in somewhere, I said. And I was ringing around a few different places. And I remember ringing one place. I can't even remember where it was. But I rang them. I said, I want help. What are you addicted to? I said, cocaine. Like this on the phone, I just hung up the phone. I was like, right, I'm not going there. If that's the attitude they have.
Like, hold guard the desk.
Yeah. But my parents were kind of like, they were like, you need to go away for a long time. Like, 30 days in a hope house won't do you. I was like, fair enough. So we were looking at Coonwarra and all them places.
Yeah.
And I had got in touch with someone. I met him in Foxford, and he recommended Hope House. And he said, you know what you're going to do tonight? I was like, what? He said, you're going to go to a meeting. I was kind of like still skeptical. I was like, fuck this. I said, no. I said, I don't want to do that. And anyways, I was given some number from Westport, and I was told, text him when you're outside. So I went up, met this fella, went in, and I was sitting there like this. I said, a state of me too. I was first swelling the face from, and then the black eyes. I said, people like, what's wrong with that fella? But went in, sat down in this dark room. I was like, fuck is this like? In my own head, it's like, how the fuck have you managed to get yourself in here?
You've been in worse places, bro.
Oh, stop, yeah. Anyways, I sat there. I was like, I'm not going to speak. I'm not going to say it. And once the first person spoke, then I was like, Jesus, that's kind of like me. And
yeah, no, it's mine.
Another person said something. I was like, what the fuck? I was like, this
is the told to say it.
Yeah. And that first meeting, I was like, this is just something else. Then I got hooked on the meetings, like I was still trying to get in somewhere, and I had applied to go into Hope House. And I had what would you call it? Like not an introduction, you know, the assessment.
Yeah,
assessment to go on there. So I done that, and then you obviously they knew the family from across the road because it was my grandparents' house that lived there.
You're the fellow that's peeping out the window.
Yeah.
That's an amazing place.
Yeah,
amazing. I've been up there. Like they have it. They run a meeting up there as well.
Yeah. But I went in there and it was done my assessment. And they told me, he's like, you have a chronic cocaine addiction, alcohol addiction, everything. I was like, yeah. And I had to do the piss test there and then, but sure, I came back for the Librium that was still in my system. They said, look, when that goes out, you can come in, make sure you're clean. So I went in there in February. Yeah, I think it was the 10th or the 11th of February. I went in there, walking in that door that day, I went in with my father, talked to the main counsellor over everyone there. And he was like, have you lost any friends? I said, yeah. And he pointed to, there's a few chairs. He's like, they're sitting there. They're going to be here through it with you.
Oh, shit.
He said, you're not on your own.
Yeah.
And anyway, I hugged my father. He went out the door. He was crying. I was crying. And I spent 30 days in there. And I can't even describe the place. It was just unbelievable. But my mindset before going in there, I was thinking to myself, geez, these meetings are good. Like, you can do this on your own. You don't need to. But your addiction telling you, like, you don't need that. And went in or whatever. And I said to myself, I said, right, I'm not going to leave anything behind here. Everything is going to come out. I'm going to leave it there and that'll be it. So went in, done 30 days. It was tough, like, because on a Wednesday you have a family day or whatever. And your family come in and you have to sit and listen. You can't open your mouth. To their side of the story, like what you done to them.
That's good though, like.
Yeah.
It's good, but I'd say it's tough, is it?
It is tough watching your mother and father cry and then your brother and then.
Especially when you get that clarity away from the drinking drugs, like that's taken out, because I wouldn't give a shit. But once, like now, I was talking to my father today, and stop on me lunch. And even like, he's in recovery as well, and we're just talking about fucking life and.
No, it's mental. But like sitting there having to listen to your parents, like the first week I was like, still, you know, I had no feelings. I was that numb from taking drugs for so long. Like I would have been using every single day, whether it was a bag, an 8-ball. I think the last night I ever took stuff, I close enough to a 1/2 ounce of coke in the space of 12 hours, like sick. Like I don't know how I'm not dead, like. But I remember halfway through then, I was like, this fucking weird feeling. And I went up to one of the counselors, like, what's wrong with me? I feel like, I know what I feel. And she was like, that's your feelings coming back. I was like, what? She was like, that's your feelings coming back. It's like, do you feel bad now for what you've done to your parents and all this through your addiction? I said, yeah. She's like, yeah, your feelings are coming back. It was the weirdest thing ever because I haven't felt anything in so long. And got through that anyways, and they wanted me to go to secondary treatment, and I kept shutting it down. I was like, no, I don't need it. I thought the 30 days is enough. But it turns out when I came out then, I was COVID hit. So I remember it said, they were telling me, when you go back out into that world, nothing will ever change. The whole place is shut down with COVID. And
you know you're a boss.
That was the only lie though.
Yeah.
That was the only thing.
I'd be paranoid thinking, oh, they're after doing that on purpose.
Yeah. But because I was going to my meetings every day, sticking to me aftercare, and then everything was online. Just since then, though, it's just been something else. The feelings you have, like, you can go out now and you're not looking over your shoulder. You don't know this, you don't know that. You're not hurting anyone. It's just, it's fantastic. Like, even with the guards as well, I always thought the guards were this, that, and the other. Like, that Christmas after the lads had died, I got arrested. I got caught with 2 bags. And the abuse I gave them for
nothing.
Like, just, they were doing their job. There was a stage there, I couldn't come into Sligo without the car being ripped apart. I thought this was class at the time, like, and Ballinagh the same, getting ripped apart, like, just the whole time. And since then, I actually, the guard in Ballinagh who arrested me that night, I remember he pulled me, he kind of put down the window, and I turned around to him, I said, well, whatever his name was. He's like, who's that? And I said, Luke Noxon, from Foxford. And I said, yeah. He was like, fuck me, I was only thinking of you the last day. And I was telling him the crack. But the respect they have for you, and then they see that you've got yourself in order. It's like, I was only looking out.
They love it. I was only chatting to a girl from Sligo last night. He's a member of the drug squad. And I was reaching out to him and I said, you know, looking to speak to TDs, counsellors, guards, fucking prison officers, etc. And just hear from different perspectives. And I just texted him. I said, yeah, we do a podcast. And he goes, yeah, I know, I've been listening. fair fucking play to you. And this is a fellow that would have arrested me as well.
Yeah.
I even said it to my father today, and he goes, and you run away from them years ago. Yeah. And it's like, it's very ironic, like, but at the end of the day, they're not out there to make our life difficult.
No, they were trying to help us.
Yeah, it's mad.
Funny how it comes full circle.
Oh.
Since then, life is just great, like. It was strange.
Relationship with your family today?
Yeah, it's nothing else. Like, even to look at them now, when I went into recovery, like, they were just, they look shattered. They were shattered, like, they look 20 years younger now.
Yeah.
But to help me through everything, like, they didn't turn their back on me for a second the whole way through it. Even whatever I called them, whatever I done,
yeah,
they were always stuck by me. But towards the end of my addiction as well, I just think of there, I used to always say, oh, sure, once a drug dealer, always a drug dealer. They're always going to look down on you, or you have this past.
Couldn't be any further away.
That was always going through my head. And I was like, "Your the one thing I can say is your head is always your worst enemy."
Yeah.
Cause like,
it's like going into a bad neighbourhood.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what it's like.
It's literally just like you're your own worst enemy. Like, you could think all this, that, and the other, but no one else is thinking it. It's just you being paranoid.
Program yourself to be that way, man.
Yeah, you kind of shut everyone else out. Like, but yeah, now today, I have
yesterday. Yesterday,
yeah, 4 years. It's meant like yesterday was just like another day though, because I found the first year though was hard, just in the sense you're counting down the days till you're 30 days. I turned 30 days actually in Hope House. And I spent my 25th birthday in Hope House as well. Strange, like, no cake, no nothing. You're just kind of sitting there. Yeah. But,
no cake or not.
Yeah, ripping out of the cake.
I have a green bun in the Garvey, bro.
Snap. Yeah, looking back now, like, even the people in there, it's with, like, we all got on like a house on fire. But coming out to COVID then was strange, because everything went online, and it was hard to do the online meetings, but I'd done a few here and there, but it's delighted when they opened back up. What, it was like a year?
No, it would have been just over a year. The meetings were able to open back up before everything else opened.
Yeah, there was, what, you could have, like, the chairs were spaced out. Or
yeah, there was a big Western area meeting, and they were able to open back up.
Yeah, but they made suggestions for me when I came out of Hope House. No smartphone, which was, to be honest, the 30 days without a phone in there was unbelievable. Like, I didn't even want a smartphone when I came out. I had a little block phone. There's going wrong with that. No, I deleted Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. I think 6 months that was supposed to do that. But even going back on Facebook, I was there pure paranoid. Like, who's going to be messaging me now looking for this, that? There was no messages. I was delighted. Deleted my old Snapchat because I didn't want to be looking at the memories of fucking...
We're trying to get them off Snapchat at the minute, don't we?
I deleted Snapchat 3 years ago. I'm dying to get off Facebook and Instagram and TikTok now, man. I really, really am.
Yeah,
it's doing me fucking head in, man.
She does be always killing me now. You're always on the phone. You're always on the phone.
And if you look over at her, then she's out.
Yeah. But yeah, it's all is in your hand. Yeah. Like, that's something you need to watch.
It's
instant
gratification. You're just
wiping for nothing, innit? And it's the same shite as well. Like.
Yeah.
Catlet. I need to get off it. I need to. I will. I'm going to delete Facebook now.
But
keep some sort of social media.
Yeah,
exactly. It's kind of hard to not.
I know, yeah.
Like, we do have a fucking podcast.
Like, I know, I'm work. Like, my phone, my phone's ringing off the hook at work as well. Like,
but the first year, I found like it was always counting down to 30 days, or 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, and then you get to that year, and you're just, I mean, to be honest, getting to the year is the best feeling, ever. Like, you're like, this is unbelievable. And after that, then, I was just sticking to the program. I was doing a few meetings here and there. The one thing I'll say is, what I find for recovery, it works whatever way you want to work it. Like, obviously, when you first get into it, they say don't think with your own head.
Yeah.
You'll find the meeting for you, or you'll find talking to this person will help you, or anything like that.
Yeah.
Even what we were told in Hope House as well, like, keep, you know, how you'd have, say, good memories of taking drugs or whatever. Yeah. Keep all the bad memories on your fingertip.
Yeah.
And that works for me. Like, even telling them stories there, I feel cold and I start shivering. And it's, my hands go cold, my feet go cold.
Because if you get them.
You didn't turn the heat on.
Because if you have the fucking heat on down there, you cunt. Because if you were to forget them, you know, I do hear people saying, oh, you'd forget what it was like out there. And I'd be like, what? Well, you fucking don't. You know, I'll never forget how bad it was out there. Like you said, keep it on the fingertips, because do the things that's going to keep you from going back.
Yeah, the thing that keeps me sober today is I know if I pick up a drink or a drug, I'll be dead.
Boom, boom, boom. I'll have
no family left. I'll have no girlfriend. My child will be taken away. I'll have no job. Whatever, like even thinking now, like, I think someone said it on a podcast before, which he, maybe one of the lads, he's in recovery now too. He said, the excitement we used to get was when we'd ring for the bag. Yeah. And then when you get it, it'd be pure paranoia. And we were saying, just, you start ringing for the crack. Just not pick them up. Yeah, just to get that buzz.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
Oh, so I remember, man, I was speaking a couple of weeks ago. I was coming back down to St. Stephen's Day from Balmullagh. And every time I'd leave Balmullagh, I'd be leaving Shannon and the child. And I'd be coming down the road. I knew exactly what I was doing. And I was coming down the road. And the song was playing, She Stepped Out and I Stepped In Again. And I was bouncing. I was like, you're not going home to take drugs now. And I was like, I couldn't wait to get down the road, man. I met loads of people, went for a swim. And it was just fucking unreal. Such a feeling.
Yeah.
Such a feeling, man. One thing that I can take away from this, man, is your family are fucking amazing.
Yeah, they are. Like, they've stuck by me. Without them, I'd be dead. If they didn't decided one day, right, fuck him. I would have been delighted in my own head because I wouldn't be worried. But, like, back then I thought I'm not hurting anyone, just myself. Like, why do they care? But, like, today, it's mental. I can't even describe it. Like, I have a girlfriend. I have a child just turned 1 2 weeks
never
ago.
Never seen you or never has to see you.
Yeah, exactly. Doesn't know anything. Like, thankfully, the girlfriend I'm with now, she wasn't with me through active addiction, like, but, like, I wouldn't be with her if I was still drinking or drugging. Not a hope. I started my own business there in...
Yes! Boom!
In October. It's just a business on the side now.
Going to give it a shout-out on this?
Can do, yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's Mapped, I call it. Mapped.ie. It's on Instagram. Remap cars, like... it was something, like, I was contemplating for a while, like, I was thinking about doing it. And then there was a course in England. I said, fuck it, you know, I'm going to pay the deposit today and I have to go.
The mother ringing up the course. Is he in?
Yeah, is he in there? Yeah, done that, like. But without recovery, I'd have nothing. I'd have absolutely nothing. When I was in active addiction, I had nothing. Everything else was belonging to someone else or whatever. Like, what I can say to people who are thinking about doing it, just do it. I know it's easier said than done. Yeah. Anyone ever contacts you, like, you can give them my number. I'm happy to help anyone. Like, there's a couple of the lads there.
So that's what I'll ask you while we're on this subject. If you could go back and talk to your 20-year-old self, you know, what would you say?
Just stay out of Sligo. But no, I'd be like, just don't follow the crowd. Just because someone else is taking drugs, I know it's easier. Everyone has to try it too, like, well, not everyone has to try it, but you know, there's peer pressure or whatever. But I say, just don't pick up that first drug. Even when I was in active addiction, the crack you'd have just having your few pints of few people without even taking drugs. I remember saying at a meeting before, I was like, my mother actually asked me this. She was like, do you miss it? I said, there's nothing more I'd love than to go on a 3-day bender. Yeah. And I said it at a meeting and they were like, yeah, no, we feel that too.
Oh man, put a bag of coke beside me and I'm gone. Do you know what I mean?
Like, but the first key you'll take then, you'll just be paranoid. I'd be looking out the window of the caravan there, like, is that that blue light's there like this?
Oh sure, that happened to me. I was like 5.5, nearly 6 months clean. And I was living on my own at this time. And I skipped the meeting on the Monday. I skipped the meeting on the Wednesday. And I was getting paid on the Thursday. You know the way they say the relapse happens before you pick up. Do you know what I mean? So I was thinking all that week. I was like, do you know what? I'm living on my own now. I said, nobody's going to know. I said, you know what? I haven't tasted coke in almost 6 months. I bet it would be fucking lethal. I bet I'd get that buzz that I got the first hour time I'd done it. Man, 2 or 3 coins. Paranoid the bits. I was hiding wet. This was a three-story building I was staying in. I was living in like a little made-up sitting room on the middle floor. I had weapons hid all over the place thinking that the biggest gangsters in the world were fucking coming after me when I had no bills, no nothing. A screwdriver in the bathroom, like down behind the urinal, thinking, all right, and someone comes in, I'm grand.
Quick, run to the bathroom.
No, but I hid it there in case when I went to the bathroom, that's when they came in.
All right.
A weapon everywhere, so that no matter where I was in the place, because I was going through all the different floors, hiding. I'd stopped taking the 50 bag, I'd put that down, turned on my music, put back on my runners, turned off the heating, all the blinds closed. running from the bottom floor to the middle floor to the top floor, searching the place, yeah, thinking there was someone hiding. Do you know what I mean? Everything back the next day then, got into a meeting, pulled my eyes out. Oh, I'm at the relapse and everything's gone. My life is over. And they all told me that it was okay, that this happens. And
yes, of course I have.
But that's what I mean. I didn't understand that, yeah, because I hadn't done it before. I hadn't seen anyone come in after a relapse.
Yeah.
You know, and to them, they were like, oh, it's okay, these things happen. Just keep getting to your meetings. And I was like, all right, deadly. I thought they were all going to tell me to fuck off. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Do you have many people that text you or reach out to you? Like, how do you get clean and all that kind of stuff?
A few people from, like, say, the Instagram posts and Facebook posts. Like, that's the reason I put that stuff up, is because hopefully it'll hit home with some person. Yeah. Like, what I could say to people is, if you're thinking about it, just text someone that's in recovery. Like, I don't... Look at my story, like, I don't care. I have nothing to hide. Like, I thought I was this, that, and the other. Like, even people I know, they think, like, right, if I go clean or whatever, they'd be kind of like, what about the name I have? Like, I thought that for myself for ages, or what I have to deal with.
Hesitation.
Like, there was rumours going around back at home that my parents had to sell their house to pay a debt for me. Like, that is complete and utter rubbish.
Nonsense.
Like, this sort of stuff. But, like, the name does go away. People are going to find someone else to talk about next week. Yeah. Like, if you get yourself, what I found from my experience, if you get yourself clean and sober, people respect you for that.
Yeah.
They're not going to be looking down at you, oh, that's the fella who used to do this, that, and the other. People forget about that.
And then, like, before we got clean, we thought it was a weakness. We thought, oh, no, I'm not doing that. The lads will laugh at me, this, that, and the other. Yeah. Self-fucking-hatred, like.
For me, early on, man, and I would say this and highly, highly recommend it, the meetings fucking saved my life.
Yeah.
The people in the meetings saved my life. And today, those meetings, I don't go to meetings as often as I would like. However, they've given me the foundation, they've given me the clarity, and they've given me the awareness to get my life back. Yeah. Honestly, like, they have. Yeah. I've never seen so clear in my life. And I think the biggest thing for me going into the rooms is just the awareness. Just awareness around why you're thinking the way you are, why you act the way you are, how you respond to people. That right there is the fundamentals of you reacting and picking up the drug. And that right there was the fucking... I know now, when I'm feeling a certain way, all right, this is where it starts.
What I didn't realise as well is, you know, we thought, oh, it was all going to be about drinking drugs.
It's very wrong, like.
The fourth step is about drinking drugs. All the rest of the steps are about life.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm growing up, I'm fucking 35. I only start growing at 40 when I came.
You only start living your life,
yeah,
and enjoying your life when you get sober.
Like, as you said, it's like opening your eyes in the morning and you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Like, I'd agree with you there. Like, that's what I tell anyone is, start off with the meetings. Try them out.
The fundamentals and the foundations.
Exactly. And you'll find yourself how as you go on, like,
what works for you?
What works for you? Yeah. What works best for you? If you don't like that meeting, try another meeting, yeah, or talk to people or no, whatever, like, it does.
What we're doing now at the moment, I go to maybe one or two meetings, maybe three meetings a week, and that is to carry the message to other people that are just coming in the door, that I'm literally just in the door 9 months and I've done what was suggested to a certain degree, but I realised that I don't want to go to a meeting 7 days a week for the rest of my life, that I want to live my life to the fullest. And to go into the meetings, let's say 1, 2, 3 nights, that's why I went and done the chair the other night. I said to my sponsor, I was like, I'm not getting anything from the meetings as what I used to. They're not fulfilling me. He goes, cool, what are you doing? What are you giving back?
Yeah.
So I went to the meeting that night and I was like, I'm chairing tonight, guys. And I just shared, start to finish. And then they just picked up on everything that I kind of said. And I was like, that's my way of carrying the message. Like, the podcast is one thing, but you've got people coming into the rooms for the first time, yeah, seeing it face to face. I come in there a broken little boy.
Yeah.
With no hope. Yeah. Contemplating suicide. Wanted to kill myself. Wanted to leave my job, my family, my son. Everything. Wanted to throw everything away. And I just done, went to the meetings. And in such a short period of time, I'm propelling very high up on my job. Doing extremely well at home. Starting to be financially stable. The podcast has taken off. I'm trying to help other people that are struggling as well. In such a short period of time, this has all happened.
Because you're putting in the work. You know,
yeah,
it's not about the fucking clean time. It's about the footwork.
Yeah.
You know, you come in. Like, it's get busy living or get busy doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's why I turned around to Mano. Mano was, you were in the door, what?
2 weeks?
2 weeks it was in the door, and I was planning this podcast. I had it going on in my head for about 6 months, 7 months. And then I paused it for a while and then got it back going again. I said, right, I'm doing it now. I'm pulling the plug. And another mate of mine was going to do it with me, but he had a lot of stuff going on. So he says, do you know what? He says, I can't right now. I said, you know what? I'm glad you said it to me. Do you know what I mean? You look after yourself. We're all good. Do you know what I mean? Straight away, 20 minutes later, I turned around to my wife. I was like, do you know what? I'm going to ask Manu.
Me doing press-ups in the house, yeah.
And she was like, do you know what? Yeah, that's a good idea. And boom, like, do you know what I mean? Because I seen the footwork you're putting in. You know, when you help me as well.
Footwork.
Like, the buttons about the birth.
It's like myself with the dad.
We're going to get you to the gym soon. Oh,
you need more than one.
And then, it's not only that then. You know, you were the one that came up with this whole fucking community. Like, look at the community we're starting now as well.
Do
I mean the community.
Community.
Community. Don't be slagging me Dublin accent, right? The sea swims, the fucking cacao and the hikes and all, like, do you know what I mean? This is fucking amazing, like,
yeah.
And it's giving people...
Luke's going to join us for a wee swim one of this.
I will, and have to let him down.
Can you swim?
Yeah.
Barely.
Well, he can't swim either, mate.
Join me, you want to use a life jacket?
Yeah.
I know,
and I swear to God, we were at Galway last week, and he was like, oh, I brought the life jacket. And then I was like, life jacket, why a girl? And then we were walking out to the pier, and your mom goes, cheater.
She says, you're cheater. I was like, oh, man.
As long as you get in that sort of ladder.
Yeah, first one in, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because just straight in. Because if I think about it, it won't do it.
I'd be the same as you. I remember going to Galway there, was it 2 years ago? You know the big York you jump off?
Yeah.
So with, one
flipped off the top of it.
I seen that. Me there looking over. I was like, do you know what? No, I just went back, ran, jumped in. I was like, this is great. We there like this kind of.
Well, why don't you fight in
your dreams?
Yeah,
I wouldn't jump that. Even with the life jacket. Yeah.
Still, but I don't take drugs today, so that's my fucking way.
I know, that's
drugs.
Okay.
The hair going boom, 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 boom.
You can do that. That's, I'm not saying don't fucking do it. I'm just saying, like, that is mad.
No, bro. Fucking unreal listening to you. And I just want to say I am extremely proud of what you're doing today. You're absolutely smashing it, man. Come here to me. Absolute legend, bro. Legend.
Yeah. No, I have to say the two of you and what you're doing is unbelievable. Like, I'd say, like, even me, myself, like, listen to people's stories. Like, it always brings you back. And when you can relate to something, it always brings you back into your recovery. And even if you go complacent or whatever, you'll always hear something. You'll be like, this is why I'm here. Like, this is why I'm in recovery. Do you know?
Appreciate
special, man. Because I know you. I know you, what, 5-6 years?
Yeah, I'm not that.
Anyway. This is my first time hearing a story. Like, even though we would have partied and tried together and stuff, this is the first time I heard your story. Like, you talk shite around the kitchen table. Waffling, complete nonsense about fighting dead people.
Yeah, you can't even remember those conversations today. Like, but at the time, they're real deep and meaningful. Yeah.
Because it was all...
Let me tell a story.
Yeah.
Shut up, you told a story 10 minutes ago.
We used to have a stick. You'd pass the stick on you onto the speak.
Like. I wouldn't even give the stick to anyone.
Yeah.
For every house party, I'd be stuck to the TV button on fucking Eddie Murphy and some call-out traveller shite on the TV.
I was only telling Dean before you came. Remember you'd be in a house party and it'd be 4 or 5 in the morning, and then next thing you know, I'd hear this, sorry, excuse me. And you pop out the door.
Bro, I still do that. If people are in fucking queues of the show, I go, sorry, excuse me.
Me, you're looking around thinking, some old woman in the house. This fella here beside you.
Yeah, man. It's good to sit here, laugh, joke about, you know, all that kind of shit that we went through, man. Like, you know, we've grown up.
It's really been a pleasure listening to you, brother. And I was with you all the way, like, you know. And thanks for being so honest as well. Because a lot of people, like yourself, have lost people through addiction, you know, so a lot of people are going to hear this and be like, you know what, if he can talk about this, I can talk about this.
Yeah, even if it helped one person, like, that's the whole goal, to come down talking, like.
Yeah.
Like I said, for myself, I would have loved someone my age to be able to talk to or relate to at the time.
What age? You're, what, 29 next month?
29 next month.
29 next month.
Yeah.
You're speaking so openly. Like, this is what we need, man. We need more people, the younger generation, coming on and speaking openly. Like, and I'll think that your fucking ego, I'll take any amount of drugs. Like, I used to be the same. But, yeah, look, thankfully today, man, life's different. You've got a little family for yourself, bro.
Family and a job that I love today as well. Like, it's just...
your own business.
Yeah.
It's such a short period of time.
Yeah, no, it's... if you set goals for yourself too, like, that's... And if you can't laugh as well, there's something wrong. Like, you should always be able to laugh or pick up the phone or ring someone else who's in recovery and have a laugh at them. If you can't have a laugh and someone's ramming this, that and the other suggestions down your neck, which is, but they're telling you what to do.
Need it though, don't we?
That'll put people off though too, if someone keeps at you. Like, you'll find your own way through recovery. Like,
You'll find your people that you will listen to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I have people in my life that will feel, just give it to me fucking straight. You know, if I don't want to go through something, if I don't want to think or talk about something, I'll say something to either man or what, or to Peter or to one of the lads. You know, we only said something to Peter the other day, and I knew, I said it to him subconsciously, because I knew when I said this to him, I had to go and do it. Like, I probably didn't actually do it.
You're fucking idiot.
But most of the time, I do. Do you know what I mean? I got there late. I was saying about, because I'll say it again, I've never ran and jumped into water. I always walk in because I've an awful fear of water. Like, do you know what I mean? Now, with all the shit that happened in my past with water and all. But that's one thing I want to do. I want to stick the life jacket on. I want to just run and fucking jump into the water. Because I see all yous doing it, and I'm like a fucking dope walking in. You know what I mean?
It takes more balls to walk in.
Right.
Luke, really, thank you so much for coming on.
No, thanks very much.
Fantastic seeing you again, bro. Honestly, man. Honestly. Absolute pleasure. And
so, a powerful story, man.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Lockstock and Two Joking Addicts. Luke, thanks again for coming down, bro. Really, really appreciate it. It was lovely seeing you.
Season 3, let's do it.
Let's do it. Boom!